Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on You Can Beat City Hall when we come back. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. Now, rule number one is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. If you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of the legal cases that you get involved in. And that's because all of the evidence that's going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give the prosecution the victory. At least make them work for it. Listen to what the courts have to say about this thing of keeping quiet or shutting up in the face of police interrogation and, in some cases, police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" He said that in United States versus Dickerson. The second judge said, "You can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." That comes from Belknap versus United States. And the third one says, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and farsighted," in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary, a commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, please go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, you can beat City Hall if you put your mind to it. It isn't all luck. It has to do with biding your time and picking your fight. Biding your time and you pick the fight. Ordinarily, government picks the arena in which the fight is going to be fought. Government makes the rules by which we are going to conduct the fight. Government then forces you to pay for all the costs that are involved in this fight. In the final analysis, the government has the cards stacked in the government's favor. And then there's the intimidation factor that comes into play. That's where you go up against an attorney and he says, this is this county attorney or the city attorney or somebody, and then he says, "We're going to throw the book at you. We're going to give you the full 5 years. We're going to give you the full penalty. We're going to fine you the max." So, and then he comes back and he says, "Well, I'll tell you, I'm a nice guy and I just want to protect and serve and help. So instead of giving you the max, if you plead guilty, we'll cut this in half. If you'll plead guilty, we'll recommend no time in jail. If you'll plead guilty, we'll do this, that, or something else. And oftentimes people aren't guilty of what it is that they're being cunningly coerced into going into court and pleading guilty to. Yeah, they're innocent, but they don't know how to fight back, and they're pretty well persuaded that you can't beat City Hall. Well, how do you handle a case like that? I one time ran across a case of a young fella. His name was Joe MacArthur. He was a Nez Perce Indian going to college down at the University of Idaho in Boise. And as college kids are wont to do, they got a little rowdy one night having a party. And this fella MacArthur, he'd been a little rowdy in the past, and he'd gotten a couple of drunk driving citations. And in Idaho, your third drunk driving conviction amounts to a felony for which you get sentenced to 5 years in the pen. So MacArthur, who's a little rowdy to start with, is having this party over at his apartment, which is her sorority or house or whatever it is, on the campus, or right close to the campus. And somebody calls the cops, and the cops come out, and they say, hey, tone this party down, and blah, blah, blah. And so they left, and then pretty soon another call comes in. The cops come out a second time. Hey, tone this party down. It's a little rowdy, you know. So they didn't tone the party down, and so about, midnight or so, you know, party's going good, and somebody calls the cops again. So the cops come out, and now they've been out here a couple of times. And you know when the cops come out a couple of times, by the time they come out the third time, now they're getting a little rowdy. And so they went up, and they knocked on the door, and this guy MacArthur comes to the door, Joe, and he's drunk. No two ways about it. He's drunk, and he's rowdy. And the cops say he got to tone this down, and MacArthur, who's a little rowdy, evidently told the cops something he didn't want to hear. So the cops said, MacArthur, is that your car down there at the curb? And MacArthur looked at it. He said, yep, that's my car. And the cops said, well, it's parked illegally. Now go down there and move your car, or we're going to tow it. Now, MacArthur's drunk. The cop says, if you don't move your car, we're going to tow it. It's parked illegally. I don't know if his car was parked illegally or not. The cop said it was. It might have been. It might not have been. And so MacArthur goes, gets the keys, goes downstairs. He walks out, gets in his car, starts the engine. And as soon as he starts the engine, three cops are watching. They come right over, open the door, and arrest him for drunk driving. Third time's a charm. Was MacArthur drunk driving? Well, by the definition of law, you bet. See, if you're sitting behind the wheel and the engine's running, you're drunk. You're drunk driving. You don't have to be driving down the street. Well, they took MacArthur in, they prosecuted him, convicted him, and sent him to prison for 5 years. And this gives rise to this old adage that says you can't beat City Hall. Well, maybe you can't beat City Hall if you're drunk. But you know, when the cop said, go down and move your car, doesn't every driver know that if you get behind the wheel of a car and you've been drinking, and you start the engine, that's drunk driving? Now, the way to handle that, you know, when a cop tells you to do something that's patently illegal, that's called entrapment. The correct defense in this case was to plead entrapment, and had he done that, he probably could have won that case. I mean, it was a clear-cut case of the policeman told him, instructed him, threatened him, and then told him what law to break. Now, I'm sure that Mr. MacArthur went and hired the public defender. Now, I got to tell you a little story here about public defenders. I was in jail one time and minding my own business, doing my own thing, and Larry Richards came in. Now, Larry Richards was Sheriff Chuck Palmer's administrative assistant. Not a bad guy. He was a pretty nice guy. He was a jerk, but he was a pretty nice guy, you know, as far as jerks go. And then he said to me, he said, you know, Gordon, what your problem is? And he said, as the pie of life goes by and somebody sticks his thumb into your pie and takes out a plum, you just go plum ballistic. And I said, Richard, you're exactly right. And that's because I believe in private property. And if it's my pie, keep your thumb out of my pie. I'll keep my thumb out of your pie. You keep your thumb out of my pie. So as we were chit-chatting a little bit and just kind of bantying about it, he said, you know, Gordon, you don't belong in here. Why don't you bail out? And I said, Richards, I said, why would I want to bail out? I'm a civil rights investigator, and I'm in here investigating civil rights crimes. I'm exactly where I belong. It takes time, effort, and energy to infiltrate the jail, and I've infiltrated the jail, and I'm in. And now I'm going to interview the prisoners, and I'm interviewing these prisoners with federal standards for prisons and jails in mind, and I'm looking for crimes. And as we were chit-chatting, I asked him, I said, what did you do before you came here to Ada County? And he says, well, I was a public defender in Richmond, California. I said, well, that's interesting. I said, how long were you a public defender? And he said, 6 years. And I said, well, in the 6 years that you were there, what kind of a caseload did you have? And he said, about 28 cases at a time. Now, boys and girls, just for your information, the American Bar Association has calculated that one lawyer can handle 12 cases per year. That's about one case per month, 12 months a year. That's a full caseload. These public defenders, by the way, this is the national average, handle 28 cases. So when he said 28, he was simply saying, I do about the national average, 28 cases. Now, boys and girls, I can't handle 28 cases simultaneously, year-round, all the time, day in and day out. And neither can anybody else. They do it. But then it raises the question, and I asked Larry this. I said, well, how many cases out of those 28 that you were carrying in your caseload, how many of those cases did you win? And he looked at me in shocked surprise, and he said, it's not the public defender's job to win his client's case. And that told me a lot. That statement, that answer told me a lot. Like, huh? Excuse me. That's like hiring a fry cook and you order ham and eggs and he brings you the ham and eggs and the ham is burned and the eggs are raw and you say, these ham and eggs are raw. I thought you said you were a fry cook. And the cook says to you, it's not the duty of a fry cook to make sure that the eggs are cooked and that the ham is not burned. I thought that the duty of a cook was to turn out edible food. Don't burn the ham and make sure you cook the eggs. And here's a lawyer. I mean, this guy is a card-carrying, trained, bona fide, licensed, bonded, and insured public defender. And he says, it's not the public defender's job or duty to win his client's case. So I said, well, what is the public defender's duty then? I thought I was going to learn something here. And I did. And he said, now get this. Write this down, boys and girls. If you don't get anything else out of today's lesson, make sure you get this. He said, the public defender's job is to protect his client's rights at every stage of the proceedings. It's to protect his client's rights at every step of the proceedings. Now, if you're a truck driver or a housewife, that went right over your head and you don't have a clue as to what that means. But if you were trained in law, if you had a law degree, if you had spent any time in law school, you would immediately read between the lines, and here's what that says, paraphrased. If the public defender who is representing you does his job and protects your rights at every stage of the proceedings, he will lose your case and you will have no appealable error. Because Richards, in 6 years, handling 28 cases simultaneously, let's multiply it out, 28 cases times 6 years, that's 168 cases. Now, these cases constantly roll over. And a lawyer will do about 28 cases a month. So it's 28 times 12 times 6 is 2,016 cases. Now, that's a hell of a caseload. But Larry Richards, in his 6 years, if he was an average public defender, did 2,000 cases for 2,000 living, breathing human beings. And he lost all 2,016 cases. He never won a case. But then that's not his job, remember? His job is to protect his client's rights at every stage of the proceedings. And if he succeeded in doing that, all 2,016 of those people went to prison and had no appealable error, so that there was no possible way for them to exonerate themselves. Now, listening to these stories, you say, well, see, this is why you can't beat City Hall. Well, MacArthur could beat City Hall fairly easily. I'm sure that even drunk he should have known, should have, maybe he didn't, but he should have known, that, hey, I'm drunk and this cop is my adversary. This guy knocks on my door. I'm drunk. I'm having a party. Somebody's turned me in for the third time now tonight. This cop is not my friend. He didn't come here because he's going to do me some kind of a favor. And now he tells me, drunk, to go down and move my car? Couldn't he say no? What if the cop had said, here, and then handed him a marijuana cigarette and said, here, light up? What if the cop had handed him, you know, a couple of lines of coke and said, here, snort a little? Would he have done that? Right in front of the cops? And in the case of Larry Richards, you know, every one of us have to make a choice, have to make a decision. Now, I've just revealed to you the solution to the problem. When you have a public defender who is offered to you, free of charge, at no cost to you whatsoever, if you accept him, you will lose. If you don't accept him, you might win. You probably won't, but you might. I have never heard of a public defender who has ever won a case for his client. And indeed, the system is not set up for public defendants to go in and act as your advocate and win your case. Remember, the public defender is paid by the state. The state brings an action against you. It's the state of Louisiana versus Joe Sixpack. The state of Louisiana brings you into the state of Louisiana's court and prosecutes you with the state of Louisiana's prosecutor. And the witnesses against you are the policemen who work for the state of Louisiana in front of a judge who gets paid every Friday by, guess who? The state of Louisiana. The rules and all of the laws and regulations that are made up, the rules of court, are made by your adversary, the state of Louisiana. Then the state of Louisiana, magnanimous guys that they are, come to you and say, now, just to show you how fair we want to be, we are going to give you the state of Louisiana's public defender who has never won a case in his life, and he's going to come in and defend you at our expense. Well, let me put it on this way. If I was to ask you to come here to my farm and I said, well, I'm just disappointed in the way you drove down my lane, so I'm going to charge you with speeding on Gordon's lane, here's the law. This is the Gordon law that you broke. Now let's take you into the Gordon Court of Justice and try you based upon my rules in my court. My wife will be the judge. My son will be the prosecutor. And my daughter will come in and testify against you. And just to show you how fair I want to be, I'll come in and represent you and defend you in my court. What would you think of that? You know, boys and girls, you don't have to be a real mental giant to figure out that this judicial system that we call a fair trial here in the United States is anything but a fair trial. Well, it's a fair trial, I suppose, for the state, and it's probably a fair trial for policemen and prosecutors and judges. But is it a fair trial for the defendant? Fair. Does that mean that he's got a chance of winning? Fair. Means he's got a chance of prevailing? Fair. Means he's got a chance of telling his story? No, sir. Now, Palmer had a legal assistant named Larry Richards. Palmer, remember, is the sheriff. Larry Richards confides to me that he's never won a case. Didn't tell me how many cases he did, but he said he did the national average, 28 cases at a time. They turn those cases over about every month. 2,000 cases, never won a case. You know, my common sense says to me that if you want to beat City Hall on that score, never take a public defender. And you say, well, I'm just a truck driver and I don't know how to defend myself. Son, it doesn't make any difference what you do or how you do it. If you take the public defender, you're guaranteed to lose. If you don't take the public defender, you actually might win. And as a matter of fact, you might win 10% of the time. Which isn't much, but it's better than losing 100% of the time. Now, Judge Judy is a drama. That isn't reality. Courts don't really work that way. You know, they're that way on television. But when you go into the courtroom, you'll find that judges and courts and prosecutors and policemen don't behave and they don't talk like and they don't perform like you're watching on Judge Judy. Nice lady, and a good program, very entertaining. But that's not where the real world is. One time, I was doing a case. I'd been charged at this very same jail by this very same fellow, Larry Richards, not assault, but they had another word here for it. I'll think of it here in a second. Kind of slips my mind. You've got resisting and delaying an officer in the performance of his duty. Not an obstruction, not resisting, but obstructing and delaying an officer in the performance of his duty. And they wanted to take my fingerprints, and I said, well, go get a court order, boys, and when you get a court order, I'll be more than happy to give you the fingerprints. Well, you can't get a court order without a signed affidavit, because it's a search warrant. Now, most of the time, when the police say, hey, stand over there, we're going to take your picture and take your photographs, the average guy, in fact, I don't know if very many people ever said, no, I'm not going to do that. But the Supreme Court says that you need to do it. And here in Missouri, our Supreme Court actually has a rule, it's 30B2, that requires it. To give your fingerprints and your photograph voluntarily waives your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights protected under the Constitution. People do it every day because they've been brainwashed into doing it because they see it on television. And after all, you've been arrested and this is what the cop is telling you to do and you want to get out of here as soon as you can. This is a bad experience and you've never been through this before and you want to get out of jail and you want as little hassle as possible. Now, the policeman doesn't have any problem hassling you. Now, I always figured that a case that's important enough for my government to prosecute must be important enough for me to defend. Now, I remember old Judge Woods one time. We were in the middle of a case, and we were on recess, and the judge happened to see me out in the in the hall, and he said, "Gordon, do you know what it costs to put on a one-day jury trial here in Ada County?" And I said, "Judge, I don't." And he said, "Well, it's $1,200. I was kind of surprised. I didn't know it cost so much. $1,200 to put on a one-day jury trial in Ada County, California, or Ada County, Idaho, rather. And I said, he asked me, he said, now doesn't that bother you?" And I said, no, as a matter of fact, it doesn't. I said, "Does it bother you, Judge?" And boy, he came unhinged. He says, "You bet it bothers me. I'm a taxpayer." Of course, I wasn't a taxpayer, so since I wasn't paying taxes, I guess that's why it didn't bother me, but it bothered him. And I said to the judge, well, "Jesus, if it bothers you, let's just go back in there and you dismiss. And let's all go home." And he says, "Well, I can't do that." And I said, "Well, Judge, I'm not going to go in there and plead guilty either. You can't dismiss and I can't go in there and plead guilty. So here's the way I figured it. I didn't drag you into court here today, Judge. That was that policeman over there did that. And I didn't come in here and prosecute me today. That's what Gammon's doing over there. Now, I figure that any case that's important enough for my government to prosecute is important enough for me to defend. And if they don't think it's important enough to prosecute, why don't you ask one of those boys to dismiss? And we can all go home. Because I didn't drag them in here either. Now, my old daddy explained to me about bullies when I was about 11 years old. So let me tell you my daddy's story on bullies. And policemen and lawyers are the world's biggest bullies. They have what's known as the police power of the state. And they use that police power to bludgeon people. Well, my daddy said to me one time, he said, "Son, you're going to run into bullies in your lifetime." And we talked about bullies a little bit, and he described how bullies are basically cowards. They're social misfits that really don't fit into the real world. And policemen and lawyers fit right into that mold. People that join the army fit into that mold. They need somebody to tell them when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. They don't think well for themselves. They need a policy manual. They need a book. They need power. They crave power. And so they go to work for the government. Or they go to work for the IRS. You know, they're out there as building inspectors. They want to get into the bureaucracy so they can come out here and wield power over people. Make them toe the line. Oh, they tell us that they're there to serve, and God, they're just there because they love people. That's a crock of baloney. These people are social misfits, and their basic desire, the basic motivation in life is power. That's why they go into politics. That's why they go into police work. Power. That's why they go into lawyering, like Larry Richards. He was a power tripper. So you tuck that in mind, or you keep that in mind, that they're basic, they're just basic power trippers, and they're bullies. That's why they do what they do. Policeman, you know, if he wasn't a bully, you know, he doesn't have to behave like one. If a lawyer wasn't a bully, he wouldn't have to behave like one, would he? So my dad said to me, he said, "Son, you're going to run into these bullies," and after he described to me what their weak spots were, that they're power trippers, he said, "You never want to tell a man that you're going to knock him on his butt, because if you do, you'll never get the job done." So he said, when some guy comes up to you and he's getting a little rowdy with you, he says, you haul off and you bust him in the mouth or you bust him in the nose. You want to aim for the spot that's going to draw blood, because when blood starts to flow, people lose their willingness to fight. When they see blood, they don't like fighting anymore, especially when it's their blood. So he said, there's another important little thing that you want to keep in mind. If you can knock this guy down on the ground, he said, you want to jump on this guy while you got him on the ground, just beat the living hell out of him. Because if he ever gets up, you may not like the outcome. So, and I said, okay, Dad. And he said, now, if you ever come home and you complain about some bully in school, and I'm going to ask you if you drew blood on him, and if you tell me that you didn't draw blood on him, he said, well, I will. Now, children, I was a hell of a lot more scared of my daddy than I was anybody else. And I never came home and told my daddy that some bully was fighting with me or getting rowdy with me in some way. So I kind of followed that around a little bit. And one time I was about 10th grade, I guess it was, and I'm kind of a tall, skinny kid. And there was a kid named Dan there, for guy's last name now, but a kid named Dan, and he came up and he hit me in the arm. He said, welcome to Arcata High. He's a big guy. I don't know if he played football, but he's a big guy. And then I hauled off and I busted him in the mouth, drew blood, knocked him down. And he got up and we went at it. And when we got all through, he beat the hell out of me and we were suspended from school for 2 days. And then we came back after 2 days and he came over and he shoved me in the egg shop again. And he asked me if I learned anything from that. And I hauled off and I talk about the luck of the Irish now. I hauled off, I busted him in the mouth a second time, knocked him down a second time. It's the only blow I got. Someone that counted, and he got up, and we went after it. And when we got all through, he beat the hell out of me. And we were kicked out of school for a week. And I really wasn't too excited about coming back that following Monday, but I did. And I went back to the ag class, and you know, Dan never came over and said anything to me, and I never said anything to him. And for the rest of the school year, he minded his business, and I minded mine. And he figured that I can beat up on that guy, Gordon, anytime I want. And I knew that Dan could come over and beat up on me anytime he wanted. And Dan knew that every time he came over to beat up on me, he was going to bleed and hurt real bad. And he evidently didn't like that after having two experiences with me and decided that he'd go pick on somebody else that didn't draw blood on him. Okay, now there's an important moral to this story. You always have to draw blood on your opponent, because if you don't, your opponent's going to come back and he's going to bully you and bully you and bully you until hell freezes over. It's just the law of the jungle. It's the way life is. It's the way people behave. It's a hell of a world, but then that's the way it is. And lawyers are that way, policemen are that way, bureaucrats are that way, bullies are just bullies. So it's important that you knock him down, draw blood on him. But it's important that you know how this game is played so that when you do it, you get away with it. Now, MacArthur, he didn't know what to do or how to do it, and he got laid away by the bully. The solution to the public defender is don't do business with public defenders, and they won't lay you away. When the policeman's giving you instructions, you want to be very wary. This is not your friend. This is your adversary. Treat him like an adversary, not your friend. You'll get along a lot better with him. Remember the judge who said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? Yeah, those IRS agents are a bunch of bullies. And the guy that relies upon his constitutional rights, the guy that knows the law, the guy that knows what to do and how to do it, is going to fare out a lot better against the IRS than the guy who is a novice or an ignorant and doesn't know. It's just the way life is. Hang on, let me give you a reminder and we'll be right back. Now you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about bullies now, and you can beat City Hall. Let me point out, you ever heard people say, "I'll sue you"? You ever heard people threaten? Kind of reminds me of a little dog, you know, one of these little barking dogs. And they're just a real pain, aren't they? They bark and bark, and then when you turn around, they run. And then when you go back to walk, and then they run up behind you and bark, 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 and you stop, you turn around, and then they run away. That's the way a bully is. Well, I've never sued anybody, and I've never told anybody, I should put it this way, I've never told anybody that I was going to sue them. And I have never sued anybody that I ever told in advance of serving him with the complaint that I was going to sue him. It's the old adage that my daddy told me. He says, you never want to tell a guy what you're going to do. Just go do it. And unless he's brain dead, he can figure out from his position on the ground what happened. Don't tell him what you're going to do. Just do it. It's either do it or shut up. Now, the policeman, you know, he comes out and he stops you. He gives you a ticket. He doesn't threaten you. He just does it. He was hiding there behind the billboard, and you went speeding by. And you know, that's why people buy these fuzz busters, isn't it? Because they want to beat City Hall. They want to beat the highway cop. They got a driver's license in their pocket, and they're driving a registered car. They got 2,000 laws that have been laid down by their legislature. And the cop is out here. He's well-versed in these 2,000 laws, and the average driver, he doesn't even know how many laws there are, much less what they are. He's not in any position to do battle with this highway cop. It's everybody's dream to do battle with the highway cop and to defeat him, but they don't know how, and they've got themselves in the worst possible position to do just that. So the objective here, if you want to beat City Hall, is to put yourself into the best possible position. For instance, the other day, talking about fuzzbusters and war, there's a new revenue program out where they put cameras up at busy intersections, and they're looking for people that are running red lights. Now, what they're really talking about here is when the light is yellow, and you have a choice. It's step on the gas and get through the light, or it's slam on the brakes and spill your coffee to get stopped. So that's the choice you got. So most of us step on the gas. You know, you can kind of gauge, you know, am I going to make this yellow light or not. And of course, if it changes from yellow to red while you're in the intersection, the picture photographs your license plate and you get a ticket in the mail. It doesn't have anything to do with safety. It has everything to do with revenue. And after all, they got your picture, you're running a red light. Now, common sense tells us that that's a revenue generator. Doesn't have anything to do with health, safety, and welfare. It's kind of like the legislature enacting compulsory insurance. And so they say, well, you have to buy auto insurance. Maybe auto insurance is the greatest thing in the world. Well, if it's so good, how come most people don't want to buy it? So irrespective of what you think about it, do you think compulsion ought to be used? Because, you know, if we can compel you to buy auto insurance, can't we compel you to buy health insurance? You know, can't we compel you to buy life insurance? Why not? Yeah, just mull it over a little bit. Think about it. If government could compel you to do that. Now, government can't compel you to buy insurance. And in fact, if you don't want to buy auto insurance, you don't have to. There's another alternative. In fact, there's two alternatives. Personal recognizance bonds and property bonds. I don't have auto insurance. Let me tell you why. The auto insurance industry, when I broke in as a claims adjuster back in the 60s, they used to complain that for every dollar's worth of revenue that they take in, every dollar's worth of premium, they paid out 5 cents in claims. That was in 1960, 65. They'd make 95% gross off of their $1 premiums. Over the years, the costs to the auto insurance industry have gone up, and they have complained bitterly that their costs have doubled. And they're not lying to you. It's the truth. Today, for every dollar's worth of premium that the insurance company takes in, they pay out 11 cents in claims. 11 cents. Now, it's doubled. Doubled. Now, of course, they don't tell you that in 1960, you could buy an auto insurance policy for $40 a year, $45 a year, and today it costs you, I think the average now is $800 a year here in the Midwest, $3,500 a year in the major metropolitan areas like New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. $3,500 a year. I heard of one guy paying $7,000 a year in New Jersey. He had three teenage daughters. $7,000 a year. Now, when you take a look, what are the chances of you having an auto accident? You know, just think about it. When was the last time you had an auto wreck, auto accident? And you mold that over, and how much was the damage? All right, got that? Write it down. When was the last time you had an auto accident? How much was the damage? I'm 67 years old and I had two auto accidents. One of them was $126 and the second one was $350. Okay, now that's George Gordon's claims. Now, if I had been buying auto insurance for all those years, I would have been paying premiums. And let's see what that is. $350, that was the price of my 47 Merc. And $126. $476. $500 worth of claims. Or losses. $500 worth of losses. And let's see, the 16 to 60, 50 in 50 years. 50 years. It's about $10 a year. Had I been paying premiums all those years, you know, let's just, you know, average it out. 800 and 840 divided by 2, $420 a year for the 50 years. So let's plug in 420 times 50. So I'd have paid in $21,000 and I would have collected $500. Not bad, huh? Now talk about beating City Hall. I took a look at those numbers, not just as a policyholder or not just as a Joe Sixpack citizen, but I'm a claims adjuster and I was trained. trained in claims adjusting. And I looked at this and I said, no, this is patently wrong. This is just patently gouging people. And then they came up with this law, and I think nearly every state in the union has it now. You have to buy this policy in order to drive your car. They won't sell you a registration for your car unless you've got this auto insurance. Now, I ask you, what is the average automobile wreck today, near 2006? $1,835. How many auto accidents are you going to have? Well, statistically, you're going to have a wreck once every 32 years. That's right. If you take 100 million people driving automobiles, those people are going to have one accident once every 32 years at the average cost of $1,835 each. But they're going to pay in here if you're outside the cities. Well, let's just do it this way. Let's just take 800 and plug that in, and take 3,500 and plug that in. That's $4,300. Let's take $4,300 and divide that by 2, 2150. Let's take 2150 times 32 years. You're going to pay in $68,800 and collect $1,835. So the profit for the insurance industry is $65,000 over that 30-year period. On average. Now, you think that Exxon is ripping you off on gasoline. Let me tell you, the insurance companies are ripping you off a hell of a lot more than the Exxon or Chevron or Mobil or anybody else. And there's a solution to this problem over here, and it's called a property bond. Property bond. So here's what I do. I don't have auto insurance. I have a piece of property over here, and if you'll go to your state statutes, you'll see where you can post a property bond. It's kind of like bail. You're arrested, and they take you into jail, and they say, okay, well, you got to post $5,000 bail. No, you don't. No, you don't. You can post a property bond for $10,000. Now, the reason that they want you to write a check and pay them the $5,000 is because that's an interest-free loan to the state during these proceedings. Interest-free loan. Or you can call a bail bondsman. He'll put up the $5,000. No money ever transacts. But you have to pay 10% or $500, and you don't get the $500 back. Or you can put up a property bond, which costs you nothing. It is not an interest-free loan, so it doesn't benefit the state, and it doesn't fatten the bail bondsman's pockets either. So the solution when you get arrested is don't post bail. Put up a property bond. Same thing is true with insurance. Instead of putting up, you know, thousands of dollars, $68,000 over the next 30 years, put up a property bond and put the $68,000 in premiums in your pocket. It costs you nothing. Let's just put it this way. Let's suppose you want a $100,000 liability policy. You look up your state statutes, and you'll find out what the minimum bond is. Then take your house down there and pledge the equity in your house, the equity in your business, the equity you got in a lot or something else, as the security that the state requires to post the property bond. You can also do it with a personal recognizance. I mean, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So if you want to beat City Hall, you want to beat the insurance company, you beat them not after the event. Don't wait until Hurricane Katrina comes and floods your house to find out that you don't have flood insurance and that the insurance company isn't going to pay you a dime and that you've been paying thousands of dollars in premiums for hurricane insurance. And yes, indeed, if a hurricane were to cause you a damage, they would pay you. But you know, the insurance company, like the state, writes all the rules. That policy is the rule. And the policy says we're not going to pay you for the flood. So the hurricane comes. The wind doesn't blow your house down. But it blows a tidal surge in and it floods your house and destroys it. And so they say you didn't have flood insurance, partner, so it's your problem, not ours. And they don't pay you. So it's fraud. It's fraught with inequality. It's unethical. It's rotten. It's dirty. It's low down. But there's nothing illegal about it. So the solution is we don't buy insurance. And the reason for that is that God, you know, our Creator, He said, don't practice limited liability. Practice strict liability. And He says, now if you practice my law, He said, I'll make you the head and not the tail. I'll bless you in everything that you do. Hurricane Katrina wasn't a blessing, that was a curse. And He says, if you don't practice my law, then I'll send Hurricane Katrina and I'll punish you. And so the scientists and the politicians, they come along and hoot and jeer and they say, well, we don't believe in God, we believe in evolution. And we don't believe in strict liability, we believe in limited liability. Well, of course, if I was selling insurance, I'd believe in limited liability too. And I'd be telling you to buy it. Now, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and if you want to beat the insurance company, if you want to beat City Hall, don't do business with them. Oftentimes I ask students, I say, do you ever do business with the mafia? People look at me in horror, and they look, what? Mafia? Of course not. I wouldn't do business with the mafia. Why would you do business with government? Listen, you've heard of loan sharking? Loan sharking. That's where you go borrow money from this loan shark, this Cosa Nostra mafia guy, see? And he charges you 30% interest. Have you ever heard of that? 30% interest? Boys and girls, beneficial finance. The associates, the finance companies, are authorized by law to charge 35%. And get this, here in our state, I can't speak for anybody else, but here in our state, we've got a real neat program here enacted by our legislature. It's called a car title loan. And the way it works is very simple. You go down to a car title loan company and borrow $2,500. And you give the title company, the car title loan company, the title to your car. So this presumes that you own your car free and clear. So you've bought this car, you made your payments on it, and now you actually have the title and you own it and you're up against it and you need some money. So you go down there and you say, I need $2,500 and your car's worth $5,000. I mean, they won't loan you $2,500 on a $2,500 car. If your car is worth $2,500, they'll give you $1,250. They'll give you half the value of the car. They want double collateral. So you give them the title to your car, and you got a 1-year note, and the interest rate is 9.9% per month. Well, you know, just take 9.9 times 12 is 118.8% interest. Okay. Now just take $2,500 times 118.8, and that's $2,970. Now take the $2,970 and add that $2,970 to $2,500, and that's $5,470. Now, remember your car is worth $5,000. And they give you $2,500. You go out and spend the $2,500, make your payments for the next 12 months, and pay them back $5,470. So you're going to buy your car back and pay $470 more than it was worth when you went in and signed the note. Notice the interest rate at 118.8%. And that's done by our Democratic Governor Carnahan and our, Republican legislature back here about 5 or 6 years ago. Can you believe this? I'm just passing it on to you. 118% interest. Have you ever heard of the mafia charging 118%? Listen, if any of you mafia guys are out there, if there's any of you loan sharks out there, would you send me an email and tell me what's the maximum interest that you've ever charged as a mafia loan shark? Would you? I've never heard of anybody paying 118.8% interest. Not even to the mafia. But the state of Missouri has a law. I mean, we do it by law here. We use the police power of the state. Is this called usury? And what did God say about usury, by the way? And people do business with the state. I mean, people go down and get driver's licenses and registration and marriage licenses and business licenses from the same entity that charges 118.8% interest. You wouldn't do business with a mafia loan shark, but you'll do business with the state of Missouri? Okay. I don't think you're going to beat City Hall by doing business with them. Now, if you want to, you know, if you want to play in that sandbox, I was a little kid, 5 years old. Ronnie Mitchell had the biggest, bestest, nicest sandbox in Corbell. There wasn't another sandbox in the whole damn town like Ronnie Mitchell's. And every kid in town wanted to play in Ronnie Mitchell's sandbox. And Ronnie Mitchell was a hell of a nice kid, and God, we all liked Ronnie. Except when we went over to Ronnie's house to play in his sandbox. And then Ronnie had all these rules. You know, if you're playing in Ronnie's sandbox, you got to play by Ronnie's rules. And so Ronnie came up with all of these neat rules for Ronnie. But they were onerous rules for the rest of us kids. So one day I woke up and I said, Ronnie, you take this sandbox and you stick it where there's no daylight. If I live to be 110... I'll never play in your damn sandbox again. And I didn't. I never played in Ronnie's sandbox from that day forward. I had to share my toys with Ronnie, but Ronnie didn't share his toys with me. And if you're going to play in Ronnie's sandbox, you know, you got to play by Ronnie's rules. I didn't have a sandbox. I'm an old man now. I've never had a sandbox. I lived my entire life without a sandbox. And if I never have a damn sandbox, I'll live to be 110. But, you know, it's the way life is. So I was deprived in my childhood. I didn't have a sandbox. But by God, I never played by Ronnie Mitchell's rules either. So if you want to play by these rules, I mean, if you're going to sign in to Ronnie's sandbox, then I guess you got to pay the 118.8%. But it would seem like to me that there's got to be a better way in life. There's got to be something better for us to do than to pledge the title to our car, which we've got free and clear, and then pay back $470 more than we borrow. I mean, it's $2,500 more than we borrow, and then it's $470 more than the damn car is worth. There's just got to be a better way, boys and girls, to do that. And sure enough, there is. And so what we do there is we don't practice usury at all. If a guy wants collateral, we know right away this is not the guy to do business with. And if he wants interest, we know this is not the guy we want to do business with. Interest and collateral are strictly prohibited in the Scripture. And if you want to beat City Hall, beat him. You don't have to play in Ronnie Mitchell's sandbox. You don't have to borrow money from a loan company. There's a better way to do business. All right, we're out of time again, kids. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, of course. But let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.